Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Everything is Tine podcast. My name is Jeremy.
My name is Ruby.
And today, filming a new episode. New episode, who dis? As the kids would say.
Right? We're doing really well this season. We're still here.
We are still here. We are around. And we're hoping that our release schedule is going to be consistent. We'll find out. We were discussing, though, episode topics for today. And, okay. It's an internet slang to say that somebody simps for something. We're saying, what are things that we really admire? What are things that we stan?
It's not Jeremy putting the definition of simp as admire, right? Okay, sure.
Simp, like, you know, like there's a, you, what do you prefer? Simp.
Okay, great. So now we're changing English language, just letting you know. And Jeremy is very excited to tell you what he simps for. So he's like, Ruby, we got to do this. So Jeremy, please, what do you simp for?
Well, I don't want to really undercut how excited you were. I mean, I remember you saying, Jeremy, I am a simp lady. I am ready for this episode.
And that I said, is being taken out. I mean, Jeremy.
I don't want to take out a quote, though.
Right. Exactly. And as the most reliable narrator of my life, Jeremy really is doing a great job.
I want to say that, one, I agree. I am very excited. And two, I am also honored to be joined by a simp lady to talk about this today.
Ew, I hate that. I hate that term. I think, Jeremy, take it out.
Keep it in editing, Jeremy. It'll be fine. It's funny.
No, I think Jeremy cannot listen to you. He can only listen to me.
I'm an independent party here. Whatever editing Jeremy chooses to include, I can't control.
I can only hope that editing Jeremy is slightly benevolent this season, but so far he hasn't been, so I don't know. Is it fruit? I never, for as long as I live, I will never forget that he did that to me.
It was so funny. I didn't change the editing on that at all. I'm just like, I'm just leaving this in.
It is like the audacity of that, because I know that he listened to that back and was just cackling on the other end.
But anyway, yeah, so this episode, things that we simp for.
Right. Jeremy, why don't you enlighten us? You go first.
I guess the first thing that I would say I very much admire or like doing or enjoy, whatever you want to say, bowling. I'm a big bowling fan.
What he's saying
fan.
Is he simps for bowling. He is a bowling simp.
Guys, it's official. The lady simp called me a bowling simp, therefore.
Oh my God, stop referring to me as that. I think Jeremy edited it out.
Sorry.
No, what Jeremy's saying is that he's a bowling simp. He is a simp for bowling, and it's on his Tinder bio, so you should go look him up.
Right. See, that verbiage came from lady simp, so you know it's true. I really like bowling. I understand that it's not something that even as a kid or as an adult, people necessarily find to be the most fun, especially when it comes to it being in a competitive environment or doing it individually. Because I simp bowling enough to where I have just as much fun doing it by myself, surrounded by nobody, as in a group. I think if you only casually like bowling, then you probably only like doing it in a group.
Hey, I am right there with you. I also love bowling, you know?
Oh, we're lying today. Okay.
You know, just like Jeremy's a simp for bowling, I too absolutely love bowling in all forms, whether it's like, you know, going out and bowling or wee bowling, you know, it's all in the same thing. It's all the same Venn diagram.
Okay. Were you in the leagues then as a kid? In the bowling leagues?
You know, maybe I was.
I don't remember seeing you.
And you just
there.
Don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Maybe so.
Well, you were very competitive at bowling and I wasn't really, you know, trying to be that at bowling. I was just like, oh, look, bowling.
But you liked golf a lot as a kid. Right? Weren't you a golfer?
Oh, okay. So Jeremy's just pretending that we don't have 14 years of friendship and that I somehow loved golf when I was younger.
You played golf?
I did not play golf.
Really? Okay. I thought you were a golfer.
No, I took like one summer class of golf when I was in like early high school, maybe. But other than that, I never played golf.
Really? I thought you did more golfing than that.
No.
Really? I'm shocked.
No. Mine was always casual, like, oh, let's go to putt-putt golf. But no, I was not golfing, if that's what you're saying.
What was your sport then? Or did you just not do sports?
I did not do sports. I did cross country my eighth grade year.
I do remember that.
Well, yeah, I told you about that. Jeremy didn't go to any of my meets. I was really sad about that. He didn't come out and support me, so I quit.
Wow, that's a lot of power you're giving me.
I was like, Jeremy, my best friend, why is he not cheering me on?
Yeah, we're not the same school, but why is he not here at my school's meets? Meanwhile,
Jeremy, after my cross-country meets, is sending me texts like, I hope you did well on your golf tournament.
I really thought you did golf. So, but, no. But I think, to be fair, for a long time, you lived close to golf. A golf range or whatever they're called, golf ranges, right? Golf
course.
Yeah, that's right. I'm thinking driving range.
Right. I was not a sports person growing up. I was more, unlike Jeremy, I was not a simp for sports. I was really simping for like playing instruments because I thought that I would be good at one of them. And I was like, oh, violin, which I did from like fourth grade to I did that in like elementary and middle school, eighth grade year.
She simped so hard, she doesn't remember when she started and when she stopped.
Yeah, because I did so many things, right? Because I did violin and then I was in choir and then I also took piano lessons. So did, I was doing a lot, you know? And I was doing musicals on top of this. So that was the area that I was like super passionate about.
True. Like, well, I was being stupid, simping for sports. You were simping after getting your EGOT. Which of the EGOT categories is going to happen first for you? Like, I'm assuming it's not the G because like the instrument stuff didn't work out, but like maybe the Emmys or the Oscars.
The Instagram.
She's going to get an Emmy through Instagram, guys.
I know, but going back to things I actually really like, out of the instruments I played, which really was just violin or piano.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved violin. I don't know why I switched to piano. I have no idea why I switched to piano. I was just not good at it.
So since you're claiming that you simp for the violin, have you had any urge to pick it back up as an adult?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I bought a guitar a couple years ago.
I remember this.
Because I always wanted to learn how to play guitar. Like, it was something, and like I had warning signs, right? Anytime I played Guitar Hero with my friends, I was just miserable because I was like, who holds an instrument like this? It's so unnatural. And I don't know, understand how I was like, yes, I need to play the guitar because like everybody does. It's like a thing. Two of my like best friends play the guitar. I need to know how to play the guitar. You know, like you and Brianna were like, damn, loving guitar. So I picked up a guitar and was like, okay, I'm gonna learn how to play this. And then that was like lasted a week or two. And yeah, it's currently under my bed now. I really wish I had a violin. That's where I'm at with that.
I think that's interesting because from what I've heard, the violin is much more difficult to play because there aren't frets on it designating where the notes are.
I took it at a very young age. And I just really enjoyed it. To me, it's so much easier and so much more natural to play a violin than a guitar. And maybe that's just because I started at a younger age, so it was just so natural. The guitar feels so unnatural. It feels like way too large, and it just feels like clunky. And I'm like, I also don't think I really like the sound.
That's interesting.
Is there like a certain instrument you would have wanted to have played instead of the ones you did play? Like for me, I love violin. I don't think I would change it, but I would love to have like learned how to play the saxophone or the drums. I think the drums would be so much fun to play.
I really wanted to take voice lessons. I mean, this is maybe like childhood trauma. So fun for the podcast. During one of my piano lessons, I expressed interest in doing that to my mother, and it came up in piano. And I had a very strict piano teacher. I mean, I'm a big fan of her now, but like at the moment, like actively trying to get me not to do it, like in cahoots with my parents to where I should stick with piano and like dedicate all my time to that instead of doing this other thing. So if I could go back and redo it, even though I don't know how I was a kid, like I expressed interest and it didn't happen. But if I could change something, I would have done that because I didn't end up doing any sort of voice lesson until I did it for fun, like during a summer at college.
Would you do it again? Like, would you just like now?
Oh, yeah. I would do it now. I've thought about it.
You still like singing?
I like singing alone. The idea of singing in front of people has been not a great experience for me. So,
what do you like about singing? I'm always curious because, like, I took choir, which is not the same thing by any means. But, like, I mean, the people who like singing, it's so, I'm like, why? Like, I understand it's like a form of like expression, but I just seems like anytime I meet somebody who really enjoys singing, there's like a real reason why they want to, besides just like, oh, this would be a cool skill to have.
I think I like singing for the same reason I like piano. It's just like a means by which you can vent frustration or feeling or whatever that is and funnel it into something that's more constructive than just being upset.
I could see you like starting like a YouTube channel where you like sing or write songs.
What is this claim? So when I'm like, I don't want to sing in front of people, but you're like, I could definitely see you uploading a video where potentially thousands of people see it. What is this claim?
Because it's different. Like, I do not think that you would ever sing in front of like, the only people I can think of you singing in front of are like, I don't know, a spouse in the future. Otherwise, like, he will not sing for any of his, I don't think you would sing for friends. Yeah. Maybe you would. Maybe I'm incorrect.
I've sung in front of friends before.
How was that?
Uncomfortable.
Why did you sing in front of them then?
They asked me to.
They've asked you to, and I've never gotten a serenade.
That's not true. One time when we were doing a jam session when Brianna was playing the piano.
You never sang the lies. Absolutely.
I don't recall.
Literally. I see how it is. Mm.
I don't have the desire to sing in front of people. I'm getting better though. I would do like a karaoke night, maybe.
I've heard a lot of my friends have told me, some of my friends haven't heard me sing, but they're like, you know, you have a voice that would be really good for singing. I never know how to take that. And I'm like, I think they're just dumb calling me loud without wanting to call me loud. I'm like, okay,
I don't know.
What does that mean? Like, does that just mean my voice is projecting like a little too much right now? So I never really know about that one. In terms of instruments, like violin, I think I was fairly good at. Again, I played all my instruments by ear, and that's why like teachers hated me, because I would rather watch them do it and then do it and not read the notes, because I cannot read the notes as fast as I can play. So it's like, let me see you do it once and then I can do it and we're good. Like, why do I have to read the notes? So I was constantly like rebelling and pretending to read notes and not reading notes at all. So I would just like mess around with the violin. And then I was already like, why am I needing to read notes? Like, I can just copy anything I want to based on like watching somebody do it. So like, why? This is a waste of time. Honestly, this episode would be about music, because I have a lot of rants about it, because they made us play. Like, what happened at school, and this still irks me because I was thinking about it the other day, was like, I went through a lot of music. I went through like musical theater class. I was doing like musicals. I was doing theater. I was doing like choir, like all these things. And then in between, they had us do like the weirdest instruments. They're like, here's a recorder section. We're going to play the recorder.
Yep.
Learn the notes to like Mary Had a Little Lamb. And then we're going to have 25 of you stand in the same room and try to play it for a whole semester. And then we're going to move on to like, what are those like tubes that are just like different colors and different sizes? And you like hit them on the floor and they like make a sound.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
This thing. There are like different like hollow, like this is an instrument, I think. And like, it's a thing.
Were they just having you were they just having you like throw kazoos at the ground? Is that what you're describing?
No, that's not a kazoo. I know what a kazoo is. That's not a kazoo. It's like a visual. It was an instrument. I'm not talking about handbells either, because I didn't do handbells.
Okay. You're not talking about recorder, you're talking about a different hollow tube. It can only be played.
That's what I'm typing into Google right now.
Google search. Hollow tube that I throw at ground musical.
Yeah, it's a thing, Jeremy. This stuff.
I believe it is a thing.
Oh, they're called boom whackers, percussion instruments.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, these. Okay, so they have like different. So they have the name of the note on them. So like C, D, E, F. G, H, like, you know, the musical notes,
not,
whatever.
Not H. H is not a note.
I don't know what she'd make us do, but she would, like, each have us have, like, one of the things, and then she would, like, have, like, a song, and then we would all have to, like, hit the two on the ground in line with it. So there's that, and that's fun. But, yeah. So we had, like, a variety of different things we were playing in music.
Yeah. Your school was stacked with all these instruments, geez.
Yeah, they were having us just play every instrument to hopefully we were good at one of them. So, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is an interesting question. Okay, so like if you were like a music artist, right? What genre of music would you be making? Okay, maybe I need the two questions. What genre of music do you think would you accurately be making? And what genre of music do you wish you could make in theory? Because I feel like those are different for some people.
That is interesting. I think I would want to make jazz.
Mm-hmm. Like, but I think in actuality, I am a country music artist.
Kinda, yeah.
He has like the voice for it and the accent for it.
Oh my God, yeah. I can do it if I need to.
I know he can. That voice has haunted me throughout the years.
No, it's difficult because I would want to say like folk, acoustic, I guess would be.
Banjo.
I like the banjo. I don't know how to play it.
I'm not
but I
saying
like
anything against it. Okay, so your answer is you would like to be a jazz musician, but you right. would, or artist or whatever. But then instead, you could act in actuality, you're like country though.
Acoustic. Because the issue is also like I play piano. I guess that can be country still. I would say acoustic music. What about you?
I don't think I know my voice well enough to know what genre of music I would easily fit into. It's not like I've sat there and been like, let me sing through like multiple like different songs and different genres to figure out which one I'd suit more. Definitely not country though. I can tell you what I'm not. It's not country Ruby, music.
Why? Okay. Country. I don't have much of a country accent though.
No, but I feel like you would do well as a country music artist for some reason.
With no country
like
accent.
You can have like the little country twang. You can play the guitar. What do I have? I can't play the guitar. I don't even like country music. You asked me to name five country music stars. I don't know. Like you have, actually, no, I'm going to embarrass myself.
Yeah, do five. I know you know two.
Dolly Parton.
That's the most important. Okay.
When I want to say Shania Twain, she's not country.
Yeah, Shania Twain counts.
I can't name a single song. I'm so sorry, whoever's listening to this, but I really don't know any Shania Twain songs. I just heard Jeremy talk about her.
Okay.
That's the only thing I know.
The audacity.
Billy Ray Cyrus.
That counts, yeah. He was a country star before the Hannah Montana days.
Can I say Lil Nas X?
No, that does not count.
Please? Can I get a half a point for Lil Nas X?
No.
Does Miley Cyrus count? Not anymore.
No,
but like,
Miley
can I do
count.
Like pre Miley Cyrus?
No,
can I do Taylor Swift in her Fearless era?
Fine. Four. There you go.
Okay. Yay. Four. Okay.
I'm surprised. I thought you would be a fan of someone else that I'm thinking of, but I guess maybe not.
Johnny Cash?
Yeah.
Yeah, my parents are fans of Johnny Cash. Like, I guess I could say John Denver, but I don't consider him like country music artist, so.
Yeah, he's a country music artist. He charted on country charts, so that counts.
Interesting. To answer your question, I have no idea. I know what I would not be, which is anything that's like country music. I don't know, rap. Definitely not a rap artist.
I would love for you to be like a Nicki Minaj rival.
The next Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
The next Ice Spice.
Oof. I guess we totally did a tangent there for like 30 minutes, but are there other things that you simp?
We're really going to try to tie it back in here. We should just do the whole episode on music.
Okay, I'll say one other thing that I'm a big fan of, Dolly Parton, bringing it back to country music. She's an icon. She is the moment. She is all things. I would normally say go to Dollywood, but because of how Tennessee is right now, maybe not. There are more places that are inclusive than Tennessee is at the moment. I don't simp current legislation in the Tennessee state legislature trying to censor art and queer people. Sorry, I just had to work that in because it just makes me angry whenever I think about it. So I don't simp Tennessee state legislature, but I do simp Dollywood and Dolly Parton. There's one for me. What's one of your simptations? I hated that combination. But we're here.
I did too.
Nothing.
Me. I hate the world.
actually, everything is terrible.
I'm right. I really like sour candy. Anyone cares about that?
That's important. Also, food related. We love that. Do you have a favorite sour candy?
Yeah, I don't know the name of it because I just discovered it like 2 weeks ago, but it's amazing.
Oh. Mm-hmm. That's really helpful for people that want to go get candy.
Right. I'm sorry. I don't know the name of it. It's like, think sour straw, but like fruit roll-up.
What I love about this is that you're inadvertently gatekeeping your favorite sour candy from the audience. Like, actually, it's only for
me. It's a Target.
It's a great. It's at a large grocery store. That's helpful.
You asked, Jeremy.
Any other things that you simp?
Board games. I really like board games.
Ooh. Do you have a favorite board game?
I like Clue. Settlers of Catan, also really fun.
Interesting. I've not played that. I've heard good things, though. Another musician, Joni Mitchell. Big fan. I simp her music. I don't think there's any actor or actress that I'm that way with.
Yeah, I'm not sure who you mentioned, but okay.
Does that mean you don't know who Joni Mitchell is, or you're talking about the actors? Or
yeah,
actresses?
I don't know who that is.
I don't know how to feel about that.
You don't understand how Jeremy is surprised when I don't know who certain music artists is. I have never in this friendship displayed any type of like deep knowledge of music. And then Jeremy will just like say people and then just act shocked when I don't know who they are. And it's like, I don't sit here and act shocked when you don't know who Harry Potter characters are.
I know all the Harry Potter characters. Quiz me.
Okay, who plays Ron Weasley?
Seth MacFarlane. Next.
Shut up. See, this is what I'm talking about. Jeremy, have I ever displayed like any knowledge of music really besides like the mainstream pop stars or like just people that my parents happen to like?
You're a K-pop stan, right?
I'm not a K-pop stan. I like BTS. I like their music. I like a lot of like Latin pop music. I like a lot of like popular artists from there, like Maluma, Bad Bunny. And, like, some of the older music I like is just from my parents and like records they have. Love the Beatles. I love some like older like rancheras, like different ones that like my grandfather had, things like that. Like I don't really listen. I don't have like on my Spotify. It's not like I have just like lists of people that I listen to. I really don't listen. Like I listen to pop music and then like old music that like either my parents or grandparents had on like a record player. I know like music from like musicals because I like musicals, like old musicals. But those three, that's about it. I'm not sitting here like searching Spotify for new artists. I'm not super into like, let me deep dive about this like musical artist or genre. Like that's not what I'm really doing.
This is one thing we're different on.
Yeah, this is like Jeremy is very much a music person, and I'm not. Like I like music. I like playing music, but like listening to it, I honestly think that I appreciate the lyrics to music more than the actual instrumental music. I know that's like a hot take because I know a lot of times when people listen to it, it's like, oh, I really like, you know, the people's vocals or like the sound of the instruments. I like the lyrics. This is another reason why I just like people who are really good songwriters are people who like, I mean, I appreciate people who sing well, like Hozier. I really like his voice, but like, I just kind of like storytelling in songs or lyrics.
This is interesting to me because you like storytelling, but you're not a fan of like country or folk.
No, because I don't like the instruments in those a lot. I don't like the banjo. I don't like the sound of it. I don't like I love storytelling, but I just like it in like a, it's just a different delivery of it. You know, like I think like I just like I said, I'm not really listening to it. Like, I don't know. This is kind of hard to explain, but I know a lot of people who will be like, I like this song. I'm not even listening to the lyrics. I just like the sound of it. And that's not relatable content for me because the only reason I'm listening to a song is because I like the lyrics of it, not because I like the sound of it.
But then the sound of it can make it to where you don't want to listen to the song, though.
That's true. And sometimes I'm like, these lyrics are great, but also like, what is this like noise in the background?
Interesting. Okay.
Like, I think that like there are some artists, especially like artists who have like louder percussion in their songs where it's just like, okay, the lyrics I like, but like, why is it so loud? Like the percussion in it, I'm like, this is too loud. Like, can we have an acoustic version? Something. With a little bit less. So I don't know. I appreciate kind of like what Sam Smith kind of used to release or like Adele releases or like Hozier releases or things like that, where it's like, okay, listen to this song. And there's like a clear story. Lord also, like there's like clear storylines in those. I don't need to listen to like those artists who release stuff. And it's just like people who really like music will listen to them. I'm like, I just don't like, it's not really it for me, you know?
All right. No, that's fair. So yeah, I mean, I guess we've talked about art and what we simp and music, can move into a new piece of art that we watched together, a movie called Whoever Slew Auntie Rue? Wikipedia describes it as a horror thriller film. I don't know if I fully agree with that. Parts of it were very funny. I feel like that underplays the comedic value of it. The movie opens and it's a bunch of dolls sitting on shelves, and Ruby was very upset.
I was very upset. I was like, Jeremy, is this going to be like part of the Annabelle series? I don't like dolls, especially like porcelain dolls. And this woman just had so many of them. It's like creepy nursery setting. And then there's like a skeleton, decaying skeleton in a crib. That also the crib looked like it was made for like someone who's literally seven. So that made no sense. That was like the intro to it. And so I was like, oh, this should be fun.
Well, we meet the main character, Auntie Rue. She's sitting in her mansion. It's definitely a mansion surrounded by dolls. There is, I forget exactly when this crib is displayed. Pretty early on, we see a crib. It looks like that a small child would lay in the crib, and it is a corpse, which we later figure out is the corpse of her daughter who passed decades ago. Don't understand necessarily how decomposition worked in relation to the crib and how the skeleton was. That was a bit questionable. But we open, and then there's Auntie Rue, the main character. She has a couple of staff members too, the most predominant one being a butler. It's established pretty early on that she's in this mansion, and then juxtaposed is this orphanage where they're living in not the best conditions. And we meet Christopher and Katie, who are the two protagonists, I guess, of the story. And the whole gist is that every year, Auntie Rue holds this, like, I want to say it's Christmas, but they're there for like a long time. Holiday festivity party / feast situation for the local orphanage. And they bring along 10 to 15 of the children to that each year. How would you describe her house?
Like, I looked at it from the house. Okay, it starts out at night, so like you can't really see it. But if you see it during the day, it was like, oh my gosh, this looks like a very well-decorated gingerbread house.
Did you appreciate the interior decor of the house?
It was very like antebellum for some reason. And yeah. I was like, okay. A lot of like doilies and like, it was a lot. It was like very old fashioned, very, I don't like antique. But we weren't really interested in the house because the main character was giving 110%. Like, I don't know how to describe the main character.
We were calling her Trisha Paytas.
Yeah, but we can't just be like, tell the audience it's like Trisha Paytas. It's like Trisha Paytas, and then we need to give another like.
This would be if Trisha Paytas decided that she was going to be Mary Poppins.
That's a strong claim. Maybe. What do you think Mary Poppins is about? My first question. That claim is also like, if Trisha Paytas was trying to be Julie Andrews as Mary Poppins, which is also a large claim.
I know what it is. If Trisha Paytas were in Clue, that's who this would be.
Yeah, for sure. It was like if Trisha Paytas was the maid in the living room with the just like 10 dolls.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what this movie was.
Doing the most.
Because she was quote unquote benevolent, supposedly. Because like she invites these orphans every year to have like Christmas with her and New Year's with her. And it's this thing. And like the orphanage, they pick like 10 kids who are allowed to go along. And Christopher and Annie.
Katie. Annie is a different Katie, movie. Right.
Just, you know, I stand, I promise. They get like chosen to go. And they don't get chosen to go. I'm wrong. Yeah. They don't. They sneak on in a very much us fashion as we would too. It were very us though. So,
yeah, if we were in a situation where we were orphans that were going to a very wealthy woman's house for Christmas.
Right. If we were orphans and they didn't allow us to go because we were too problematic, this would be us. I will say, let me make a claim here.
All right.
This is a side note for those of you listening. Jeremy really cares about continuity if you've been listening. I do too, especially like time period continuity, except in the context of our podcast, because when we're watching these types of movies that have these types of synopsis, I'm just hoping that the plot makes sense. So like these kids sneak there, but like are caught by the butler who's in the kitchen. It was unclear because he was kind of cooking, I guess. And then everybody's like super shocked. Like they're shook when they like walk into the living room.
Oh yeah. I mean, the kids are mad because they're like, we were the 10 chosen. Who are they? And then the adults who run the orphanage were like, why are they here? They are the hooligans. It was very much that.
It was the one lady, really.
The teacher, I guess? I don't know. Trisha Paytas was very happy to see them, to be fair. So, yeah. So, basically, they come and they eat a bunch of food and she reads them stories. And then we forgot to mention that Trisha Paytas in this movie, or Auntie Rue, is also very into seances, particularly talking to her daughter via just looking up into the air in a prayer circle.
Well, we're missing a part, though, right? They're all going to bed. Mm-hmm. And then it's not Mary. Angela?
Katie.
She, like, slides down the side of the, like, the stairs.
Yeah.
And then, like, Auntie Rue has a flashback of how she let her daughter do that, and her daughter apparently died doing that.
Yeah.
And then it goes into the seance. Like, she slides down, it's fine. But, like, Auntie Rue has that flashback. And then we go to the seance, which makes more sense now. Because it's, like, her, the butler, and then I don't know who that third guy was.
I don't know. It was not established.
No, but they're trying to contact Katie. And then there's a giant teddy bear there also.
Which was Katie's.
Right.
Yeah, because the idea was, like, we can maybe get her to come in and talk to us better if we have one of her objects around. Or there, it was very weird because they put the teddy bear in the seance circle, which was peculiar.
Very Trisha, though.
If there's a remake of this movie, Trisha Paytas could be in this movie. Genuinely.
Right. I fully agree with that statement.
But you're right. There was a flashback of her child falling off a railing. And the distinction here is that her kid who died was named Catherine. So whenever they're doing these seances, they're saying, Catherine, talk to us. Catherine, talk to us. The orphan who is now here is named Katie. During the seance, Katie wakes up, goes down the stairs to the seance, thinking that they're, like, calling her, which that's kind of fair. And then there's this whole, now Auntie Rue's thinking about, oh, well, maybe Katie is just Catherine in a new body who's come to be my daughter or whatever. Then it becomes that whole angle. And the problem is that Auntie Rue does not like Christopher.
Yeah, no, she doesn't like Christopher. And she, like, she doesn't like Christopher. But also, like, Katie has just kind of fallen for all of these, like, tricks or, like, niceties that, like, Aunt, what is her name?
Auntie Rue.
Yeah, it's easy to say Trisha Paytas. I was in between the two and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to mix that up. But like, she's doing all these nice things for her and Katie is just eating it up. And Christopher is over there like side-eyeing the whole time, like something sus.
Yeah, Christopher knew what was kind of going on.
Right, which, you know, I don't blame Katie though, because it was sus, but I'm also not like super great at red flags. So this whole time is just like, oh, that was so sweet. There was even one point in the chat I was like, oh, Jeremy, Andrew is so sweet.
I will say, she's more of a sympathetic character than I expected her to be, in that the movie is very much saying, this is like Hansel and Gretel, where the person lures the children to kill them. I don't think she actually did that. I think this was just a confluence of events to where there was a kid named Katie who went to her house this particular time that's like her daughter in a lot of ways, who liked Auntie Rue. It seemed like a confluence of events to where it all just happened to be a situation that then snowballed. There, I was more sympathetic with her than I expected to be. I understood where she was coming from. She was grieving the loss of her child, never got over it. And here's this kid that's similar who took a liking to Auntie Rue. So she's not much of a villain in the traditional sense, I don't think. Like when, spoiler alert, when she's burned to death in a pantry, I wasn't like, yay. It was like, oh, well, there's some redeeming qualities of her. I do think that she was caring. I do think that she was generous with the people that she cared about. But yeah, Christopher was not buying any of it. And there was a point where he figured out how to crawl into, I don't know what you would call it, like a
dumbwaiter.
Thank you. I don't understand how the house was laid out and that somehow through this mechanism, he was able to go through all the important rooms.
I think the dumbwaiter was located in like a servant's quarters type of area and it went straight up. I don't know where it went down. That also was not clear because, I mean, I'm assuming the kitchen, like surely, because that's the only, like, I don't think they'd be carrying food all the way to the second floor into a closet.
Yeah.
But also she wanted this room to be hidden. Like it is literally like, the door to it is in the back of her closet. So I guess maybe this dumbwaiter is also a weird location for it.
There are moments when she would open the doors to the secret locations of the house where I'm like, I don't fully understand how the... I'd like to see a blueprint of the house.
I don't. It's creepy. But I mean, okay. Like, Jeremy's like, I want to see the logistics. I'm like, well, this house was just creepy to me. Like, it was a creepy house. Like, if this is me, I would not leave the room at night. Are you kidding me? The weird thing is there's just always this undertone of, like, there's never a direct answer to whether, like, I don't think she was going to eat them. Like, I really don't think that. No. But there was always this, like, thing where he was like, she's going to eat us, she's going to eat us. And then she kind of was just, like, bossing him around. But the thing is, the plan was never clear what exactly she was going to do. Because it was clear that she wanted the girl. But then mm-hmm. she was also keeping Christopher there hostage. And I was like, well, what is the plan? Like, because there's no space for him upstairs, really, either. So I was like, is he just going to be, like, a servant? But also, like, that doesn't make sense. So I think it seemed more malicious in the fact that there was, like, you don't know what she was going to do. Like, I don't think the intentions were ever laid out, really.
There were undertones that were confusing, maybe a bit ominous, but I don't think she was, like, a traditional villain. It wasn't a unanimously bad person, at least on the surface. I do think that is an interesting point that you're bringing up, though, in that I don't know what the plan was. She was cooking a large meal at the end, but yeah, there was no real indication that she was going to eat them, really.
No, and I mean, like it's hard because it's more like somebody who is mentally ill versus a villain.
Exactly.
It is not like the Cinderella stepsister, evil stepmother situation. Like, mm-hmm. where that is clearly somebody who is sane and is just, like, taking advantage of somebody. This person is, like, clearly mentally unstable. Yeah. And so it is really hard to view them, like, the psychological thing that's happening with her. And so it's just very much like, this person's not well. And I think that's what makes it confusing for the audience.
That's what I'm saying. Like, in some ways, I sympathize with the fact that she is still actively grieving the loss of her child, which she clearly did not cause. You know, that was the other part that it was confusing, because I would have thought there would have been an established record of, if the whole thing is that she's consuming children or whatever, I expected there to be some sort of terrible backstory of what she did to her child. But that didn't happen. There was just an accident that happened with a kid. I don't know.
No, I don't think, I think that this is two very different films, to adults and to kids. Because, like, I think if I had watched this as a kid, I don't think I would have been like, oh, this person's mental, like, the psychological mental aspects of that person would not cross my mind. I think I would 100% been more focused on the fact that Christopher's like, she's going to eat us type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that to kids, I can see this being like, oh, this is a very much a Hansel and Gretel type tale. But as an adult, I don't think that it's that at all. So I think it serves two different purposes. If you're somebody who's young and you're not going to be catching these things, I think, yeah, I can see this as like a horror twist on Hansel and Gretel, kind of, because like, your mindset is with the kids. It's not going to be with Auntie Rue.
Yeah, that's true. It's for one of our movies, a strangely complex character as the main character.
It really is. I don't think we've had this complex of a character since
Dr. Goldfoot.
I was going to say that, but I really didn't want to compare Auntie Rue to Dr. Goldfoot, because I don't think Dr. Goldfoot is, like, mentally ill. I think he is just pretentious.
Yeah, well, they're complex in different ways.
They're complex. Yeah, yeah. I think that complex, it's almost like kind of the same thing as, remember that movie, a less level for sure, about the guy who, like, was collecting people in a shoebox. They made them small.
The one about Attack of the Puppets or Attack of the, it's something like that.
Something like that. It was like he was collecting them, but because he was lonely.
Yeah, it is very. Yeah, it's very that.
The tone. I mean, the movies are nothing like that. Like, they're not similar in that sense. But it is that very much like seeing somebody on screen who is suffering through something mentally, and then people are having to face repercussions because of that is a weird feeling. And those films, those people, the characters of the villains of those films don't really feel like villains always. Like, he didn't feel like a villain to me. I kind of felt bad for him.
Yeah, because, I mean, even, I guess, to just finish up what the plot is, right? So Christopher is constantly talking about how he gets bad vibes from her. And there are multiple attempts to escape the house. Eventually, they're able to escape. And she also put a lot of trust in him not to run away.
He could have run away, which made no sense to me. I'm like, run. Like, because I know to you, it was probably smart of him to, like, knock and get the key.
Yeah.
But, like, and we glazed past this. he already left his sister once, like, which was wild. But like, to me, it doesn't make sense to knock and try to get her out yourself. You already know you're probably not capable of that. I mean, he was, but like by means of which involved murder and arson. Yeah. But like, you know, I'm more arson than murder. I guess arson.
No,
is
it's
murder.
Both. It's both. Like, it's both in this case.
It's both. But still, like, he could just run. Like, the police, it was already established that at this point, the police were already out looking for them. Mm-hmm. So, like, if he had just run away and gotten the police, she's not going to do anything to Katie. It's clear that, like, her intentions with Katie was not to harm her.
Oh, yeah.
So he went out multiple times, and I was like, run away, run away.
Well, I think maybe it's because he left once, felt guilty about it, came back. If you're harboring that much guilt, you wouldn't want to leave your sister again, even if it would have been an avenue that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, maybe. But that's what I was yelling at my screen the whole time.
No, I totally get it, because it would have been a quicker resolve. But yeah, there's a whole situation where he rings the doorbell. She goes to the front door. He steals a key. And through the various booby traps and locked doors and trick doors in the house, he and Katie are able to escape. But before doing that, they lock Auntie Rue in a pantry, and he lights it ablaze, and they act like they have no idea how the fire started when they go outside and meet up with the butcher.
The last scene is of them like smiling away in a carriage,
which is wild.
I honestly, okay, as an adult watching this film, like, psychopathic behavior, like serial textbook serial killer 101, because like, they, like, to me, that was very, there was something very unsettling about that final scene to me, like, personally. I know, if, like I said, different movie if you're a kid. If you're a kid and they do this, it would have been like, you probably would have been like, oh, good for them. Like, yes, absolutely. This is a happy thing. You know, I can see that, like, kids viewing this would be like, okay, this is a great resolve. As an adult, it's deeply unsettling to watch these kids light this house ablaze with somebody who is mentally unstable and walk away like nothing. They don't know. They also stuff the teddy bear full of all of her jewels.
They steal all of her wealth and burn her alive and smile about it.
Wildly serial killer-esque behavior from these very young people who also seemingly have, like, you don't really get anything past that, but have no remorse for what they did.
No.
It's just like, I thought about this. I'm like, is it me? Like, is it just me who's like, feels like this is deeply unsettling? Or is it something where like kids may not, like, would a kid genuinely act that way? I think is my question. Because in my opinion, I don't think that that would even be so, like, to me, that is psychopathic behavior. I don't actually think a kid would act that way. I think they would be traumatized. These kids seemed very happy and like, very much like, my lips are sealed. This is going to the grave with us. It's very like cold feeling you're left with. It's almost like, are they the villains of this film?
Yeah.
Is this like,
it's strange.
Like a,
I will say, of the two children, it made sense to me that Christopher smiled and that he was wholeheartedly convinced she was going to eat them. Why did Katie smile? That bothered me more. She was locked in a room. I get it. But like, the idea that she would then be wholeheartedly happy and smile that the person who was being mostly nice to her was burned alive was really unsettling.
There was a good like 3 to 4 minutes after that ending where I was trying to rationalize what this expression, what that whole like last three, there can be studies done on that, because I was like, okay, because is she just mimicking her like older brother and like, oh, if he's happy, I'm going to mimic that emotion because he's my older brother.
I don't know.
Because she genuinely, Was she coherent as to what was happening?
Or was she, because it was established early that she was very into the fact that she was getting things from Auntie Rue. Was she content getting the jewels through the teddy bear and got everything she needed from Rue and was happy to leave and burn her alive?
Is crazy. I mean, I know that they said that like the ending, maybe it was a narrator, but it was like that they had enough money that they'll be able to buy a house whenever they like all this stuff, like this whole plan. It's very eerie. Like, I will be honest, like, this movie was like, it was not considered horror until the very end. Like, that last scene where they burn her alive and then like go away in a carriage smiling was deeply unsettling to me.
I don't think the movie meant it to be, though.
You don't think, like I said, I do, but see, did it, is, do you think that like people who directed and wrote this knew that adults would receive it differently than a kid's movie? Like, do you think that they're horror for both kids and adults in different ways? Because I think for kids, it's a horror movie because they think they're going to eat them and they get away. But for adults, do you think it's meant to be a horror movie in the sense that these kids are psychopaths? Like, or is that just like a coincidence?
I think that might be us looking at it 50 years later, having more knowledge on mental health. Just a different view than 1972. I think it probably was written as the kids got away, they escaped, they were victorious.
Do you think adults now would receive it that way? Like, I'm curious if I played this for another person, if they wouldn't find that just as deeply unsettling as me. Because I will, like, that is like textbook serial killer,
yeah,
like siblings. And it's just like, no, like, the thing that was weird was that they locked her in a pantry. They could have just ran and left. She was locked in there. I mean, I get, okay, she had an axe.
She had an axe, was getting out.
Kind of hitting through.
Yeah.
And maybe they didn't feel like, I think the thing that got me wasn't so much that they burnt. I mean, the burning thing was horrific also. Mm. The smile was awful. That was the part, like if they were in the carriage crying or like just like overwhelmed with emotion, it would have been like, that was sad. I think I would have still seen that as a sad ending.
Yeah. So it was the smiling that did it for you.
Yeah. I think that the real horror is that, like, because, you know, even when they light the wood on fire in front of the door, you know, they're children and she's knocking this door down with an axe and a very shining axe. I've never seen The Shining, but I feel like that's what happens at some point.
It is.
I can understand the panic and that. But then, like, this in-sync smile to each other felt like it was almost planned. And like this was their plan all along. We got away with it type of smile.
And I think I might have felt a little bit differently had they not taken all of her wealth. I think the smile could have been, we defeated the person who was going to eat us or hurt us in some way. Say Katie believed Christopher. I could even see that. But the fact that they were escaping and deliberately went back, got the teddy bear, filled it with the jewels, and then decided, while the house was burning down, and then decided, now we can leave, now that we have all of her wealth.
Well, and the weird thing is that, like, this was an underlying plot since the beginning. Like, ever since Katie was in the seance room at the beginning, she saw, like, the drawer with the jewels. She told Christopher, and then when he was locked in the room, he decided to stuff all the things in the bear. And that's how, circle back at the end of the movie, he's like, we got to get the jewels. And, like, risked his actual life, and her life, for that matter, to get those jewels. It's just wild, because I think this would be such an interesting movie if they had done a sequel like years later when they're like adults.
Oh, interesting.
Like how that played out or if that affected them, because I feel like that should be pretty traumatic, obviously, but it didn't seem like they were affected. At the end, it really did feel like they were very satisfied with what they had done.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because it's like 2 seconds ago, you hear like the fire crew talking about how unfortunate this is and what a tragedy this is, and they're just not affected by any of that.
Because I think she did a lot of good for the community and helped out the orphanage, and I can see why they would think that.
I don't know. I think it was also eerie that they were just kids, and it just seemed very like, smile was just, it was just not great. Like, it was really not good. It was very unsettling.
It was not good, but I guess effective, whether or not that was the intent or not.
That'd be wild if it was the intent. Like, the Bonnie and Clyde, essentially.
I go back and forth because, like I said, if the whole thing with the wealth and the jewels weren't there, I'd say the purpose was, oh yeah, we defeated the villain. She can't hurt us anymore or hurt any kids after us, you know? But we took all her wealth and shoved it into a teddy bear and had to go back to it when the house was burning down. And then smiled about it. And then there was the narration of, well, now they will never have monetary problems ever again. Which also, is no one going to ask the question how heavily impoverished brother and sister all of a sudden have a stash of jewels and are able to buy a house with cash, probably?
Yeah, that, I mean, I know that it was a plan from the beginning to get the jewels to have a better life in the future. It's unclear whether that was, because I don't know whose idea, I think it was Christopher's idea. It's unclear, though, if like Katie was fully on board with that. Because I don't know, it's not clear whether she wanted to stay with Auntie Rue. Because quite honestly, she didn't seem that like...
I think she wanted to stay.
Against staying.
I mean, it was her idea. Early on in the movie, she was talking about how it'd be great to live here, wouldn't it be, Christopher? And then was very excited when, like, she was calling Auntie Rue mom for a couple scenes. Well, one of them was manipulative on purpose at the end, but the other one was to make sure that she liked her because she wanted to keep getting stuff from Auntie Rue.
So do you think that, like, these siblings are, like, psychopaths in the sense that they want... Like, do you think what they did to her was purely for monetary reasons? Or do you think, like, do you think Katie was a kid and she... like really wanted this like motherly love because she's an orphan, and Christopher was just like, this is a bad situation, but we need to get something out of it once we leave. Like, do you think that it's because they were orphans, they're just trying to like make a better life for themselves, or do you think there's like sinister intent?
The smiles at the end didn't happen. I would say both of them were in fight or flight and were trying to make decisions that would benefit them the most in the short term and the long term. Christopher in trying to make sure that his sister was safe and also trying to set them up for financial security in the long run. Katie, by trying to befriend Auntie Rue, potentially act as her adopted daughter, potentially for a long period of time, as an alternative way to provide herself and, I guess, her brother financial stability. Like, I think that all could fall under the umbrella of two people that are really just trying to do the best that they can in the situation that they're given. But the smiles at the end, I don't know. Okay, all of that said, how would you rate this movie?
Honestly, this is one of those movies that was actually a movie. I was very invested in what was going on. I am like an 8.5.
I think I'm going to go 9.
It was very good. I think that honestly, it's not a horror, like we said, until the end. I think honestly, this is one of those movies that you watch it and you're like even starting the podcast at the, or like the beginning of this whole movie review, we were like, it's not horror. But then once you think about it and you remember that end scene, I think the more you think about it, the more horrific it actually is. It's like it hits you back in the face. In retrospective, like, analysis, you're like, oh, this was a horror movie. And maybe, you know, she was, you know, more of an anti-hero and they were the villains. Like, there's just a lot of questions that I think are left open. And a lot of leeway that has to be given because these are kid protagonists.
Yeah.
And you don't know what the intent is. Like, if it was adults, okay, if it was adults doing the same thing, locked in a house, she's attacking them and they burn it down and they look at each other, like they steal jewels and they look at each other and smile at each other, I don't think we'd be sitting here having this conversation of, do you think it was, you know, a good intent or bad intent? But because it's kids, it's like...
Yeah. I think even if it's teenagers, I don't think we'd be having this conversation. But because they're like small children. Yeah, I'd say go watch it. Whoever Slew Auntie Rue, it's on Prime.
Right.
It's not super scary. It's also not really a downer all the time. There are lots of funny moments. I found it to be pretty engaging. It was also quick. It might have been an hour and a half and it really packed in the content.
Right. And like we said, there's really no scary scenes in this. Maybe the one with the coffin and the corpse kind of is a little bit scary. I will say that the only horror, it is more of a psychological horror because the horror is coming from the intent of the characters.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know with some of them or the mindsets of some of them. I think that is the horror. There is no scene that I was really like, this is scary, besides like the obsessive doll situation that was happening in the house. But yeah, I think I would say go watch it. It's really interesting. I think it'd be really interesting to like do a podcast episode on like the top 5 most complex characters we've had and just talk about them. Because I feel like there's so many things to think about in regards to this character in particular, maybe others we watch.
Yeah. I mean, even the kids are pretty complex too.
They really are.
But yeah, I guess now we'll transition into our this or that segment. Oh, hardcover physical books or ebooks?
Hardcover physical books.
Same.
All day, every day.
Is it true also of textbooks?
No.
Really? Oh.
I love my Chegg ebooks. Like, I love e-textbooks because I'm one of those people who, when I have the hard copy of a book in my hand, I can't write in them because I feel like I'm vandalizing it. And so I really appreciate e-textbooks because I can highlight. I can just type in a word and it'll pop up with the pages that have it. I can take it anywhere and study. It's great. But the hard copy books I like to have are like pieces of literature, things that it's like, this is something I want as a work of art. Textbooks, not a work of art. It's just like, wow. I just need this for information for my class. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think I like paper copies of both. And if it's a textbook, I just highlight and write in it because it's the purpose of the book.
This is an extra this or that, but cursive or print?
I don't think I have a strong opinion on cursive or print. I used to have stronger opinions on whether or not everyone should have to learn cursive.
Is that like a yes, they should?
I used to think that it was something that everyone should learn. Now, I guess I've become less and less fervent on that opinion.
I think that a lot of people who grew up writing cursive, like you're in one of those situations where you're at school and this is so different. I feel like this is what really dates me when I'm talking to people mm-hmm. is like, I grew up at the time where, I don't know if I'm saying like I grew up as if we didn't grow up together. Jeremy, I grew up at the time when like it got to the point where every assignment had to be in cursive and in mm-hmm. black pen. And they wouldn't accept anything else except math. Math obviously was pencil, but it still had to be in cursive. And so I just grew up with cursive to the point where like, I mean, you just kind of, it feels like I'm writing faster in cursive. Now I do this thing where it's like half print, half cursive. So like a lot of it,
that's what I do,
is cursive. But some of the letters that I don't like, how they look in cursive, I'll just do it in print. So then like my writing is mixed.
Yeah.
So
we were in the very last group of people that learned cursive.
We were.
I talked to people who are even just like 2 years younger than me. And it seems like that's about when they just got rid of the cursive requirements.
Even people our age.
I think what happened was just when we were still in school, in elementary school, when it was happening, checks were still a thing. Like a pretty predominant thing. They still are, but not like they were. Because that's what I remember hearing about. It's like, well, you'll need to learn cursive because you'll eventually need to be able to write a check.
This is interesting. This could be, honestly, school subjects could be a whole other topic because there are a lot of things that I think our generation was taught or not taught in schools.
Shop class was nowhere. I could have used shop class.
No, no finance classes, nothing. It was like, do they still do typing classes? Is that a thing?
They still do.
Like
they
Mavis Beacon?
They do computer classes. I assume they still have to learn how to type. I don't know though. Okay. One thing I will say, I could go on a rant about this new way they're teaching math.
I wasn't good at the old way. So like
it happened when we were in high school, all the public schools started implementing this new kind of math because I knew that because there was a mom who was friends with my mom who had a child who was probably 8 or 9 when I was 18. Like, can you help my kid with math? And they sent me the worksheets that they were doing. And to me, it's the most convoluted way of like learning how to multiply and add. Instead of doing like 48 times 7, and you know how you would lay that out, they'll go to the nearest number that's a variant of 10, like 50, and then they'll do the multiplication there, and then they'll like subtract. You're doing 8 steps in what would be 2 steps.
Well, okay, but I can see how that would be more helpful because I think it's easier to do. Even if it takes more steps, sometimes in your mind it just makes more sense. Because as growing up as somebody who was not good at math, they just remember like the worksheets where they would like time you to see how fast you could do it and like multiples of 7. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then it was so competitive, but it was also just like, I can go on rants about how mental math, do not think was taught correctly. It was taught, it made sense to people who were good at math. But if you were somebody who just did not understand it, you were just kind of like, oh, well, we're going to continue with multiples of 8.
Sometimes when you're thinking of multiplication in your head, you'll do those differences, right? I think purely in that application, I can see a use for it. The issue is, say you're getting to algebra 1, right? You don't have time to do like 8 steps to do multiplication.
Why don't you have time to?
If it's a 50-minute test and you're given algebra problems, knowing a quick process to do basic things like addition, subtraction, multiplication, division is going to be important to do that. You can't spend ample amounts of time on those simple processes and then also have to find for X. Like, it just seems like a snowball thing where things are going to be more and more difficult to do timing wise.
I don't think I ever thought about that. For me, I was not like you. I was not like, oh, we need to like make this. This is interesting because all the people who are really good at math, who can just do really good mental math, their whole thing is, how do I make math more efficient? And like, I've seen it and they'll be like, this is like the least efficient thing I've ever seen. And I'm like, but it makes sense. And then the people who are not good at math, like me, it's always like, I don't care if it's efficient or not. I just want it to make sense, because so much of the math growing up did not make any sense to where it was like, and then it's a snowball, because if you don't know it for algebra one, you're not going to know it for algebra two. I didn't take calculus. I have not taken a single calculus class. And all the people who are like really good at math, it's always like the people, it's always the people who are good at math who are like, we need to make it more efficient. And like the rest of the people are just like, can it just make sense in the first place? Cause like, and I'm not saying one's right over the other. I think that there's the fast ways of doing math require like you to first off understand what is happening. And I feel like the basic foundations are not being taught well at all, or they're going too fast. I don't know which one it is. Like, I don't remember how, I remember the math books we had, like they switched to Saxon math.
I love Saxon math. I can go on a rant
Saxon
about
how math, much, let me tell you, Saxon those math. Were the, those were the books where like they went from, I don't know what the one before was, it the McGraw, whatever, McHill, whatever.
I don't know. I
those
don't know.
Books. And then they went to Saxon math in eighth grade. Saxon and Saxon grade. Math, I can go this or that. Saxon math sucks. Saxon math.
I can see if you don't like math, Saxon math to be the worst thing ever, because they keep bringing back old concepts over and over
Every
again.
Every question. Yeah. Is not, because like, okay, they would always give us assignments. We're like, okay, you're going to do 1 through 10. And it sounds amazing. And then you open your Saxon math book and 1 through 10 is 5 pages. Because question one is 10 parts. And then if you don't do one part of question one right, you got everything else wrong. It was so stressful. I hate Saxon
math.
Well,
okay.
It's traumatic.
The whole thing of one thing and then all of it's wrong, that's a byproduct of your teacher choosing to do that. You don't have to count all the parts wrong in Saxon if you don't want to.
No, no. What I'm saying is that, like, if it is a question where it's like solve, like, if question one has 10 parts and they're all based off of answers you get in like 1, 2, 3, you know how it's like question one is solved for this, and then question two is based on what you got for part one of this, then use that number to solve for this.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. If you're getting the first one wrong and it's asking you to refer to that constantly, you're going to get all of it wrong.
I disagree in the sense that is your teacher's choice and that is your teacher not doing their due diligence. What their teacher should do is see, okay, these answers in 1, 2, and 3 are wrong, but I'm going to see if they did the process right in 4 through 10, and I'll take the numbers that they got from 1 through 3. And if they did the process right, 4 through 10 would be right, 1 through 3 would be wrong.
I don't understand that. And then don't even get me started on the Saxon multiple choice. Oh my gosh, I could have a whole episode about Saxon math and how much I was the bane of my existence in eighth grade. I hated the switch. It was so much more complicated. And it was also like, it felt very adult in eighth grade, because it's like you go from like this like nice kind of like, I mean, math was always hard, but this one felt like it's all blue and white. And then it's just like every problem is just like extensively long.
I don't
understand how it's more like, I don't understand the point of us switching to Saxon math. Like, I don't understand what.
Sure. Saxon math is okay. I will say this is coming from someone who had Saxon math from kindergarten through fifth grade and then never again.
Oof.
I love Saxon math, but the reason why most people hate Saxon math is because, unlike other textbooks, everything that you learn in previous chapters, they will keep using and bringing up over and over and over again. You can't forget something from chapter 2, even if it's not applicable in chapter 8, because there will be a question in chapter 8 that is somehow based on chapter 2.
Like, at least in other textbooks, there'd be groups of students who's like, okay, this was not my section, but this was my section, and I can do this really well. So then you'd have like portions and chapters where it's like, I can make good grades in math, it's just on certain sections. Saxon math threw that out the window, because it was like, well, yeah, we're gonna have a new section, but then also like 1 through 10 is also on here. And so it's just like everybody's grades were tanking because it's not selected. They're not, but that's, I don't think that's a good thing to implement in eighth grade. Like, if you're going to start with a book like that, start it earlier. I don't understand why they started with, like, that type of textbook at such an advanced age. Like, you should have just done that earlier, because if you're already bad at math and you're only good at certain things, Saxon math is the worst thing ever. And it was the worst thing ever. It was horrible.
I think you're right in that I imagine switching to Saxon after many years of not having it would be tough. Because to be fair, even their K-5 books, the format is all the same. The structure is all the same. How they approach problems is all the same. Yeah, there's not really many problems in Saxon that are just like, 2 times 8 is what? It's like, it's not like that.
I'm saying the way it's structured makes it way harder to score on tests certain things, because like I did well in the geometry sections with like in previous books because it was only a section about geometry. It didn't have a whole lot of other things involved with it. Saxon math took everything from every previous chapter, even if you sucked at it, and was like, well, we're going to throw it into geometry. And it was like, well, now I can't score well.
Like, to be fair, what it would do is it would have a good chunk of the questions would just be geometry, and then it would start merging.
Like five. So it's like, great, I got like a 10 on this test. It's like, okay, well, thank you, Saxon math. I remember there was a whole thing about it, like my eighth grade year, because they switched the seventh grade and eighth grade because we had the same teacher in seventh and eighth grade, and they merged the classes partially. And it was a huge thing because that was also the year they introduced the Promethean board, which was a weird experimental thing in schools. This is a whole episode. I have so many rants about this. On Promethean boards. Because Saxon math came with their own little like online work stuff to do, which is awful. I have so much to say about Saxon.
Maybe for another time. Any socials we should plug?
Yeah, our Instagram at Everything Is Tyne. Our
YouTube at Everything Is Tyne.
YouTube at Everything Is Tyne. Right, we're back on that platform. Go watch our previous videos if you have.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all we have for this episode. We have a good week, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.